are living in the busiest time in all of human history. The fact is that you have too much to do and too little time in which to do it. And if anything, the rate of change and complexity in your life is increasing every single day. For you to break through your success barriers and to accomplish everything that you are truly capable of accomplishing, you must learn how to simplify your life on an ongoing basis. In military strategy, the principle of simplicity, according to West Point, is defined in this way. Prepare clear, uncomplicated plans and clear, concise orders to ensure thorough understanding. In all communications, the commander should make every reasonable effort to eliminate the slightest chance of misunderstanding. Simplicity contributes to this end. In your life, the principle of simplicity means that you are continually looking for ways to reduce the number of things that you are doing so that you can concentrate your time, attention, and energies on doing just those things that will make the greatest contribution to your life and to your goals. Throughout all of human history, up until the end of the last century, land was the primary source of value. Most wars were fought over the possession of land and property. Empires grew in proportion to the ability to seize and control quantities of land. Because most of the world was agricultural, it was felt that the possession of the agricultural basis of any society was the key to acquiring and keeping wealth and power. At the beginning of this century, the emphasis shifted to capital. Throughout the 20th century, most of the major conflicts have been over the acquisition of capital and the factories, machinery, buildings, equipment, roads, and cities represented by capital. Money and the things that money could buy have been the driving force of human activity in the 20th century. Now, however, we are going through a major paradigm shift, where both land and capital are still important, but the primary source of value today is knowledge. And the currency of the 21st century is time. For the rest of your life, your ability to acquire practical, usable knowledge and then to apply that knowledge quickly to benefit others in some way is the key to your financial future and your success. The principle of simplicity is absolutely essential to your thinking better about the things that you do so that you can do more of those things faster that contribute the very highest value to the world around you. Most people today feel overwhelmed by having too much to do and too little time. They feel that they are running faster and faster and making little progress. However, the facts of the matter are a bit different. Study after study today shows that the average American is actually working less than he or she was working 10 or 20 years ago. The average work week has declined to about 32 hours in the last couple of decades from about 42 hours in the 60s and 70s. People are still paid for 40 hours and expected to be at work from 9 to 5, but when lunches, coffee breaks, time off, and idle effort are factored in, the average person is only working about 32 hours. And of those 32 hours, according to Robert Half and Associates, fully 50% is wasted in idle socializing, personal telephone calls, and personal business and idle activities that contribute nothing whatsoever to the work that has to be done. Of the 50% of the time that the person actually works out of the 32 hours that they are officially on the job, the average person wastes a lot of time on low-priority activities that contribute very little to results. The most important principle in personal effectiveness is the principle of clarity, combined with the principle of concentration, which we'll talk about soon. Your goal is to develop a keen sense for the things that you can do that contribute real value to the world around you, and then to do just those things. You must discipline yourself to avoid distractions and diversions into areas that may be fun and easy, but which contribute very little. Side roads are slide roads. Throughout all of human history, all progress has come about as the result of simplification in science, technology, manufacturing, business, medicine, and every other area of human endeavor. Simplification means that with new and better ways of thinking and acting, it takes less time and expense to accomplish the same or greater results. Your job is to organize your life so that you are doing fewer things, but things of greater importance and value. And how do you decide whether something is important or valuable? Simple. You simply review your goals and your aims. What is it that you really want? Every activity can be weighed, measured, and evaluated in terms of what it is that you really want out of your life, your relationships, and your work. Anything that contributes toward the achievement of the goals that you have selected is a good and valuable use of time. Anything that does not contribute to the accomplishment of your own personally selected goals is not a good use of time. And the greater the potential contribution of a particular activity to the achievement of more important goals in your life, the higher value is that activity. Everything else is a relative waste of time. The principle of simplicity requires that you continually look for ways to reduce the number of steps and the amount of time that it takes you to accomplish a particular task. Remember, time is money. Time is life. Time is both perishable and irreplaceable. Time cannot be saved. It can only be spent. Time can only be reallocated away from activities of lower value toward activities of higher value. And the more activities of higher value you can do, the better, happier, and more prosperous life you are going to have. Reducing the number of steps in simplifying your life can have a dramatic impact on improving the quality of your activities and your results. Some years ago, after studying the differences between simplicity and complexity for a long time, I came up with what I call the law of complexity. The law of complexity says that the number of steps in any process has an inordinate effect on the time, complexity, and potential cost of that process. My formula is that the potential cost, the potential number of mistakes, and the potential time required for any activity increases by the square of the number of steps that it takes to complete that activity. Let me explain. For example, if you decide to make a phone call and pass on a message to someone, that is a one-step activity. The square of one is still one. The level of complexity is very low. The likelihood of lost time, mistakes, and expenditure of that activity is very low as well. There is very little room for misunderstanding or miscommunication. However, let us say that you ask someone else to make a telephone call for you and pass on a message. Now you have two steps to the process. The level of complexity is 2 squared, or a complexity level of 4. The likelihood of the person making or not making the call, passing on the message accurately or inaccurately, and the person receiving the message understanding exactly what it is that you want to accomplish with the call goes up from a factor of 1 when you make the call to a complexity factor of 4 when you have someone else make the call. This is perhaps why many senior executives place their own calls and answer their own phones. They realize that, even though it seems a bit inconvenient, it can save an enormous amount of time and misunderstanding in the long run. Now, let us suppose that you ask someone else to ask someone else to make a call and pass along a message and get a piece of information. You now have 3 steps in the process. 3 squared is 9, or a complexity level of 9 times a simple call made by yourself. This means that the likelihood that there will be a mistake, a miscommunication, additional time or expense required to carry out the process, and the need to make a further follow-up telephone call to clarify or rectify the situation is 9 times greater than it would have been if you had simply called yourself. Before I developed this law of complexity, I would involve a lot of people in even the simplest projects in my company. I remember once when we decided to put out a newsletter announcing some of our new products to our distributors. There were 6 people involved. The items to be decided were the copy or written material, the paper stock, the artwork or layout, the mailing lists and the mailing house that would handle it, the colors to be used in the printing, the printer to be used, and the cost and scheduling of the printer, the various products to be mentioned, and the different pricing points of the products in the newsletter, and several other factors. Each person was going to be responsible for one or more of the individual activities that had to be carried out to produce and mail the newsletter. With six people involved, we already had a complexity level of 6 squared, or 36. And since each of these people had one or more responsibilities, the complexity level was completely out of sight. Instead of getting the newsletter out in a couple of weeks, it was still not out 6 months later. When the newsletter finally did go out, the color was wrong, the type size was wrong, and there was no return address that people could use to phone or respond. It was a nightmare. The next time we decided to do a newsletter, one person decided the copy and content of the newsletter, and the other person was responsible for artwork, design, and mailing. The newsletter was complete and out the door within 30 days, without mistakes. Complexity causes an enormous amount of stress and strain in your life. Think of the areas where you feel overwhelmed with too much to do and too little time and wish to do them. You begin to feel like a rat on a treadmill, running faster and faster, and making very little progress. Sometimes you can't sleep at night because you are tossing and turning, thinking about all the things you have to get done, and feeling vaguely that you will not be able to get everything done in the amount of time that you have available. The key is to consciously and deliberately begin simplifying your life in every way possible. Here are some of the techniques that you can use that are used by the most effective, most productive, and highest paid people in our society. Step number one is for you to think on paper. There is no better or faster way for you to get your life under control than for you to take a pad of paper and think of everything you have to do and begin writing them down one by one. A pad of paper is the most powerful time management tool that I've ever discovered. Many of the most productive and highest paid executives in America have written and spoken on the power of the written word. The very act of writing down everything that you have to do for the foreseeable future on a piece of paper will give you a tremendous sense of control and make you feel that you are on top of your activities rather than feeling overwhelmed by them. And the very act of writing out and organizing a list of activities begins immediately to make you more efficient and effective at everything you do. Andrew Carnegie, the steel baron who immigrated to America as a 14-year-old boy from Scotland and who started his working life as a day laborer in a steel plant in Pittsburgh, became one of the richest men in the world. He eventually sold his steel-making interest for $595 million cash in 1895 to a consortium put together by J.P. Morgan and Company. Today, that sale would have an equivalent value of $28.7 billion. And at that time, it was completely tax-free. When Andrew Carnegie was a young man, he was overwhelmed with too much to do and too little time. He asked a management consultant who was visiting the factory if he could give him any advice. The story is that the management consultant, a gentleman named Ivy Lee, took a few minutes and had him sit down and write out everything that he had to do on a piece of paper. He then had Andrew Carnegie transfer the 6 most important activities on his list to a separate sheet of paper and then begin on number 1 and stay with it until it was done. He said, "Even if something else comes up, you must discipline yourself to stay on your number 1 task, knowing that nothing else that could come up could be any more important than this." Andrew Carnegie tried this method and immediately got his entire life under control. He taught it to everyone who worked with and for him over the years. When he retired, he said that this one method of writing down everything you had to do and setting priorities on it before you began did more to contribute to his fortune than any other single idea he ever learned. You can do the same thing. Make a list of everything you have to do before you begin. Consolidate all of your activities into a single place, preferably into a single time planner. There are many time planners on the market today. All of them are good if you will use them on a regular basis. The essence of every time planning system is the same. Write it down and organize it before you begin. You should get a time planner that has a master list. Everything that you have to do at any time in the future goes onto this master list. When something new comes up, you quickly jot it down. Remember, as the Chinese saying goes, the palest ink is stronger than the finest memory. From your master list, you create a monthly list. On your monthly list, you write down everything that you have to do for that month. As new things come up, you either write them down on your master list or add them to your monthly list. From your monthly list, you create a weekly list. You plan every week in advance, preferably the weekend before. I've spoken to many successful people whose lives have turned around completely from confusion and disorder to success and high achievement as the result of taking some time each weekend to plan the coming week in advance, hour by hour. In fact, you can tell how successful a person is by simply asking them where they will be in 2 or 3 days at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Successful people know immediately where they will be a few days in the future. Unsuccessful people have no idea. From your weekly list, you create a daily list. The best time to create a daily list is the night before. This allows your subconscious mind to work on your list throughout the night, and when you awake in the morning, you often have insights and ideas on how you can accomplish your goals and complete your activities more efficiently and more effectively. But always make a list before you begin. Always work on your list throughout the day. Whenever something new comes up, even a telephone call or a request to pass on a message, jot it down on your list. At the end of your day, you can go over your list and you'll have a clear record of everything you've accomplished. A major source of stress today is the feeling that you've been working hard all day long but have accomplished very little. When you work from a list, you will have not only a sense of control and personal power, but as you review your list at the end of the day, you'll have a tremendous sense of accomplishment as well. At the end of each day, take your list and create a new list for the coming day. Transfer all the things that you were unable to accomplish from one list to the next. When your list is complete, your day is over. You can then relax and forget about it, knowing that you are completely organized and ready to go when you get up the next morning. In order to simplify your life, you must set priorities on the activities on your list. Remember the 80-20 rule. It says that 20% of the things you do will account for 80% of the value of all the things you do. You must always be working on the 20% of activities that account for most of the value. In an experiment with a group of managers recently, they were asked to list all the things that they enjoyed doing the most at work. All these activities were written on a flip chart, and the pages were taped on the wall. The managers were then asked to list all the things that they found the most difficult or distasteful to do. These items were listed on a separate flip chart and posted on the wall as well. Then, the 80-20 rule was introduced and discussed. The managers were asked which list contained the 80% of activities that contributed very little and which list contained the 20% of activities that contributed most of the value. Somewhat embarrassed, they admitted that the big, difficult, unpleasant tasks on the second list also happened to be the 20% of activities that contributed the greatest amount of value to their work and to their company. It's always the same. Fun, easy tasks contribute very little. Big, difficult tasks, however, can often have enormous consequences. And here's the key. It is contained in the word consequences. The potential consequences of an activity determine its likely value or lack of value. Some things that you do during the course of the day have no potential consequences at all. It's absolutely amazing to me how many people come to work and the very first thing they start thinking and talking about is their coffee and their lunch breaks. Yet, you could take coffee breaks for the next 30 years and they would make no contribution whatsoever to your work or to your life. Coffee and lunch breaks have no potential consequences, especially positive consequences for your career. On the other hand, there are some things that you can do and do immediately that can have enormous potential consequences. If done well, there are some activities that you can engage in that will bring about tremendous results that can really help you and your organization to move ahead. These activities will almost always be more difficult and challenging than the fun, easy things to do. But successful people are far more concerned about pleasing results and achievement than they are about pleasing methods and activities. There is a simple ABCDE method that you can use to organize your list of activities before you begin. This is a tremendous tool for simplification and dramatically increases the quality and quantity of your output. It simply requires that you think before you begin. Once you have your daily list, you go down the list and you put a letter, an A, B, C, D, or E, next to each activity before you begin. A activities are the things that you must do. These are things that have serious potential consequences if you do them or don't do them. They will cause real problems or difficulties if they are done or not done correctly and on time. Your musts are the most important things on your list. They are the top 20% of activities that contribute most of the value of what you do. If you have more than one A activity, then you organize them by A1, A2, A3, and so on. Be absolutely clear in your own mind before you begin what the most valuable uses of your time can possibly be. The second type of activities are your B activities. These are activities for which there are mild consequences if you do them or don't do them. Perhaps someone will be unhappy or inconvenienced, but they are not major consequences. They are not as important as your A tasks. And the rule is this: never do a B task when there is an A task left undone. The third letter, C, stands for activities that have no consequences at all. These may be coffee breaks, lunches, reading papers or newsletters, phoning your family or friends, picking up your dry cleaning or dropping off your laundry. Whether or not you do them has absolutely no potential consequences on your life or career, one way or another. Of course, you must resist ever doing a C activity when you have B activities left undone, and you must never do a B activity when you have an A activity left undone. This decision on your part to concentrate on your A activities exclusively is solely a matter of character, willpower, and self-discipline. If you can make yourself concentrate on A activities only, to the exclusion of all else, you will eventually be a great success in life. If you cannot, you will always have to work for someone else who can make sure that you do. The next letter is the letter D, which stands for delegate. The rule is that you delegate everything that you possibly can to anyone else who can possibly do it so that you can free up more time to do the few things that only you can do. As you develop in your life and in your career, many activities that you did when you were at a low level of income and responsibility must be delegated to others. A very successful real estate saleswoman came to me at a seminar recently and told me that she felt very guilty about not being at home, doing the laundry, preparing the meals, and keeping the house clean for her family. However, she was so successful in her business that she simply didn't have enough time to do it properly. She felt she was caught on the horns of a dilemma. What could she do? I explained to her that she was no longer labor. Because of her success, she was now a member of management. Her responsibility was not to do the job personally, but to see that the job got done properly by someone else. She had to learn to select and then to delegate. Only then could she satisfy her responsibilities both to her family and to her successful career. And this is the same for you. You must continually, consciously, and deliberately think about the little things that you do that consume precious minutes and hours of every week that you can delegate to others so that you can free up time to do the things that only you can do. The fifth letter, E, stands for eliminate. This is one of the most important parts of simplifying your life and achieving great success. It has to do with the setting of priorities and the setting of posteriorities. A priority is something that you do more of and sooner. It is an A task that must be done, a task that has serious potential consequences for your life and work. A posteriority, on the other hand, is something that you do less of and later, if at all. A posteriority is something that you discontinue or dramatically reduce the time required to get it accomplished. The rule is that you must engage in creative abandonment of low-value tasks throughout your lifetime. Many things that you are doing today have very little value in comparison with other things that you need to do. When you began doing them initially, they may have seemed important or enjoyable, but now, with the passage of time, they are no longer as important as other things that can contribute more to your success. In order to start something new, you must discontinue something old. Getting in means getting out. Picking up means putting down. Setting posteriorities, Simplifying your life by reducing the number of things that you are doing is one of the most powerful and essential of all time management principles if you want to be a great success. Remember, you cannot do everything that you have to do. In order for you to do those few things that really make a difference in your life, you must discontinue doing those things that make a smaller contribution. If you are unsure about what your posteriority should be, ask the people around you. Ask them, is there anything that I'm doing that I could discontinue without it causing much of a problem? Ask your boss. Ask your coworkers. Ask your secretary. Ask the members of your family. Every one of us has blind spots. These are activities that we are engaging in, often inefficiently and ineffectively, that make very little contribution to others and virtually no contribution to ourselves. But we are all creatures of habit. Once we start doing something, we keep on doing it. Like Old Man River, we just keep rolling along. It's only when we pull ourselves up short, or someone else stops and points out to us that we are spending a lot of time that contributes very little to our lives, that we suddenly become aware that we have gotten into a habit of engaging in an activity that is not a good use of time. I spoke for a very successful company not long ago, the president of which is a very capable and competent businesswoman. After we had discussed the difference between priorities and posteriorities, she told me that she was going to use this idea immediately to dramatically simplify her life. She told me that she was serving on so many boards and committees around her town that she had less and less time for her family and her two young children. About 2 weeks later, I got a letter from her. She told me that she had gone back home and resigned from every other community service board and committee except for two. She realized that the only reason they wanted her on their boards was because she had the ability to channel charitable contributions to their organizations each year. When she assured them that her company would continue making the charitable contributions, that was all it took. She resigned from the boards without any complaints or difficulties. She told me that by simplifying her life, she had dramatically improved the quality of her life in the areas of her life that she considered most important. And you can do the same thing in your own way. What are the time-consuming activities that you could eliminate, starting immediately? What are the activities that you engage in that contribute very little to your life, but which consume an enormous amount of time? The average American adult, for example, watches 5 hours and 15 minutes of television each day. The average American drives around listening to the radio an average of 90 to 120 minutes per day. The average newspaper reader spends anywhere from 1 to 2 hours each day reading the newspaper. How many of these activities could you cut back on or eliminate altogether to free up more time for parts of your life that are far more valuable and important to you? To simplify your life, one of the most important things you can do is to start getting rid of things. My motto is, when in doubt, throw it out. We have become a nation of pack rats. We accumulate more and more things, and then we try to hold on to them, filling our cupboards, our drawers, our garages, and even nearby mini warehouses full of stuff that we have not used for months, if not years, and will probably never use or look at again. But somehow, we cannot bring ourselves to get rid of these things. We have this uneasy feeling that sometime, somehow, for some reason, we might need them again. Almost everyone in business has piles of reading material that they mean to get to sometime. We keep stacking it up for a later time when we will be caught up with other things and will be able to get to it. But somehow, we never do. The fact is that if you haven't read it in the last 6 months, it is now junk. Throw it away. The chances are that you will never need it again. And if it is really important, it will come out in a different form, in a different publication, soon enough. Clear your workspace completely. Always work from a clear desk. Avoid the tendency to pile things up. Even people who say that they can work well in a messy environment have been proven to be wrong. When they are forced to work from a clean desk, they get twice as much done in the same period of time. Don't allow yourself to justify or rationalize a messy workspace, a messy desk, a messy briefcase, a messy office, or anything else. You have no idea how much a confused and disorganized working environment can be costing you, both in a feeling of being out of control of your work and in the impression that you are making on other people. There are several management terms or words that have been developed over the last few years to describe this focus on simplification and increased productivity. I call them the 7 R's. They are re-engineering, reorganization, restructuring, reinventing, reevaluating, refocusing, and regaining control. Let's take each of them one at a time. Re-engineering is perhaps the most popular and powerful technique that you can apply to simplifying your life and increasing your productivity. Re-engineering, in its simplest terms, refers to process analysis. This requires that you make a list of every single step of any work process from beginning to end. Leave nothing out. Include every step, no matter how small, that you would take to get from the beginning to the end of any task. You then review this list carefully, one step at a time. Ask the question, why, to every step. Why are you doing this at all? You will find that fully 30% of the steps of any activity can be eliminated in the first run-through. Fully 30% of the steps do not pass the why test. These are steps that have been slipped in over time, but with no apparent reason. They probably seem to be a good idea at the time, but they merely make the process more complicated, more time-consuming, and more expensive. A major national insurance company found that it was taking 30 to 60 days to approve an application for an insurance policy from the field. During this time, many of the potential customers changed their minds or bought their policies from someone else. It was causing a lot of stress in the field and at the home office. As a result, they decided to re-engineer the process. They made a list of every step that an insurance application went through from the time it reached the head office to the time it was approved and the answer was relayed back to the agent. There were 24 steps. What they found was that the entire time spent on an individual policy was approximately 17 minutes. But the 24 steps were taking anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks. So, they simplified the process by dividing the steps amongst 2 people instead of 24. One person then did 23 of the steps, and the second person simply checked the 23 steps to make sure there were no mistakes. Before the year was out, they were able to turn around an insurance policy and give an answer within 24 hours of receipt. They were also able to eliminate 22 different jobs in the process. Motorola re-engineered the process by which they take orders from corporate customers and produce custom-made pagers for them. The process used to consume 12 to 14 months from the time the order was placed until the time the custom pager was produced. Today, a customer can place an order with a Motorola representative, which is typed into a laptop computer. The laptop computer is then hooked up to a modem, and the order is sent directly to the Motorola factory. Within 45 minutes of placing the order, the first customized pager for the customer comes off the production line and is on its way out that day by the first available mail. This one act of process re-engineering has helped to make Motorola the world leader in pagers and cellular telephones. What parts of your work can be simplified, downsized, outsourced, or eliminated? One of the most powerful simplification techniques is called job compression by responsibility expansion. This simply means that you compress a whole series of jobs into a single job and make one person responsible for far more of the steps than before. Instead of having people checking people who are checking people who are checking people, you place all the responsibility on a single individual for the entire process. In your own personal or work life, you can use re-engineering as well. Instead of shopping several times a week, picking up several different things as you need them, discipline yourself to organize your shopping so that you do it all at once, with one trip, with each stop coordinated with each other stop. This alone can save you several hours each week. In sales, you can completely re-engineer your sales activities so that you are spending more and more time face-to-face with potential customers. You go through and eliminate or reduce every activity that is not contributing directly to customer contacts and sales. The second R in the 7 R's is reorganization. which you need to be doing continually in your life and your work in times of rapid change. It used to be that companies reorganized every couple of years. Today, companies and individuals have to be reorganizing as an ongoing process. Reorganizing, in its simplest terms, requires that you continually look for ways to get a higher level of output per unit of input. You constantly look for ways to increase productivity, performance, and results by shifting people and resources around so that they work together more efficiently and produce more at lower cost. The third R, restructuring, requires that you continually move resources away from lower value activities toward higher value activities. You keep thinking in terms of the most valuable things that you do, in terms of your customers or in terms of your results, and you continually shift resources away from the 80% of activities that contribute 20% of your results toward the 20% of activities that contribute 80% of your results. The fourth R, reinventing, requires that you continually think about starting over again and beginning your career or building your department or business as if it were brand new. Use the walk across the street method. Imagine that you were going to walk across the street and start your business or career over again today, knowing what you now know. If you had no previous baggage or commitments holding you back, what would you do more of or less of? What would you start up again, and what would you allow to be discontinued? How could you reinvent yourself on a regular basis? The fifth R, reevaluating, requires that you continually examine your priorities and the results of your past decisions to see if they are still valid in light of your current responsibilities. Aristotle once said that all of wisdom is a combination of experience plus reflection. Re-evaluating requires that you take some time to reflect on your experiences and your knowledge before taking the next step. If you don't take the time to reflect, you'll find yourself simply repeating what you have done in the past, whether it is effective or not. The sixth R, refocusing, means bringing your resources to bear on the one or two things that you can do that can make the greatest contribution to your life and your work. Your ability to focus and concentrate on your highest value activities is the key to personal power and personal effectiveness. The final R is regaining control. This is the tremendous sense of power that you experience over your goals, your objectives, your activities, your staff, your resources, and your time when you think through and simplify everything that you're doing based on what we've talked about in this session. Remember, whenever you experience stress from having too much to do and too little time, it means that your life and your work are out of control in some way. Rather than accepting this as a fact of modern life, your job is to simplify your life in every way possible. Examine your areas of highest stress. What can you do in each of those areas to reduce the burden you're experiencing? Simplifying your life is a never-ending process. Every day, every week, you should be looking for ways to reduce the amount of time and complexity necessary to achieve the results that are important to you. And the better you get at simplification, the more you will get done, the happier you'll be, and the higher you will be paid. Your ability to concentrate on one thing, the most important thing, and stay with it until it's complete is the most important single skill or discipline of success. Self-discipline has been defined as the ability to make yourself do what you should do, when you should do it, whether you feel like it or not. Anybody can do it if and when they feel like doing it, but it is the person who can force himself to do it when he doesn't feel like doing it, who will eventually win out over all the others. Napoleon Hill called self-discipline the master key to riches. It is a defining quality or characteristic of all high-achieving men and women. And nowhere is self-discipline more important than in your ability to concentrate single-mindedly and to persist in concentrating on your most important task or activity until it's finished. All great success comes about as the result of a sustained period of concentration. The principle of the mass, the ability to concentrate combat power at the decisive place and time, has been the key to victory in warfare throughout the ages. Your personal ability to mass your forces and to concentrate all of your energies on the one or two things that contribute the most to your success is essential to everything you are and everything you become as well. Napoleon once said, "When you have resolved to fight the battle, collect your whole force. Dispense with nothing. A single battalion sometimes decides the day." Your ability to concentrate all of your best resources at the point of greatest opportunity, often the point of greatest vulnerability for your competitors, can enable a smaller company to overwhelm a larger company. Apple Computer was able to create one of the most successful computer businesses in the world against the likes of IBM by focusing on its operating system. By making it so easy for a person to use an Apple computer, millions of computer users were lured away from the MS-DOS IBM operating system, thereby creating a multi-billion-dollar business. IBM, in turn, concentrated on mainframes throughout the 60s and 70s, and by doing an outstanding job, literally dominated the entire world of mainframe computer sales. Peter Drucker once wrote that, "Whenever you see something getting done, you find a monomaniac with a mission." Every product, every service, every market, every company that is successful has a champion who is totally, fanatically committed to the success of that endeavor. Single-minded concentration may not guarantee success, but lack of single-minded concentration in a competitive marketplace will virtually guarantee failure and underachievement. One of the most important principles of the mass is your ability to decide where to concentrate your forces. You cannot do everything at once. You cannot be everywhere at once. Your mental, physical, emotional, and financial resources are limited. You are always forced to choose the one or two things where you are going to concentrate your energies, and your choice of those key result areas is essential to your success. To be successful in your work, you must achieve a minimum level of competence in what are called your critical success factors. These critical success factors are the things that you absolutely, positively have to do well in order to be successful. They are called critical because a failure in any one of them can be fatal to your career or to a business. Fortunately, there are only about 5 to 7 critical success factors in any job, any company, or any area of activity. In order to win in business and personal life, you have to first identify your critical success factors, then give yourself a grade in each of those factors, and then go to work to bring up your score in the factors that may be holding you back. For example, in management, there are 7 critical success factors. These are planning, organizing, staffing, delegating, supervising, measuring, and reporting. In planning, you decide exactly what your goals and objectives are, and exactly what resources you will need to attain those goals and objectives. In organizing, you decide exactly how you are going to acquire and deploy the resources you need to achieve the goals and objectives that have been assigned to you. In staffing, you select the key people that you will need to carry out the key responsibilities that must be fulfilled in achieving your goal. In delegating, you assign the right job to the right person in the right way at the right time. In supervising, you assure that the jobs that you have assigned are being done to the proper level of quality and on the correct schedule. In measuring, you continually monitor and evaluate results and compare them against projections and budgets. In reporting, the 7th critical success factor of management, you make sure that the critical parties in your work life, both above, below, and on both sides of you, are fully informed as to your activities and their results. What we know is that a weakness in any one of these critical areas will act as a brake on your results and on your career. It will stop you or hold you back. For example, you could be excellent at 6 of these 7 critical success factors, but be terrible at staffing. You may not have the ability to hire or keep the necessary people to get the job done. Your inability to recruit and staff appropriately can be fatal to your career. This is why it is called a critical success factor. If you're in management, give yourself a score of 1 to 10 on each of these critical success factors, with 1 being the lowest and 10 being the highest. Then identify your weakest area and make a plan to bring it up. The winning edge concept of success in business is one of the most important concepts of the 20th century. It says that small differences in ability can translate into enormous differences in results. Especially small improvements in a critical success factor area can lead to extraordinary differences in results, and sometimes very quickly. For example, many managers are poor at delegation. However, if you cannot delegate well, you cannot be effective as a manager. Taking a course, reading a book, listening to an audio program, or somehow bringing up your delegation skills can enable you to increase your ability and multiply your impact throughout the organization. One of the most important principles in concentration is the principle of leverage. Your ability to leverage yourself times the people and resources under your control or influence is the key to your success in business. Successful leaders are always thinking in terms of how their activities influence the activities, outcomes, and results of other people and other situations. They are constantly engaging in what Warren Bennis in his book Leaders calls self-deployment. All top people are experts at deploying or using themselves as valuable and scarce resources so that they can make the greatest possible contribution with their time and talents. If you're in sales, you have 7 critical success factors as well. They are 1. Prospecting, 2. Establishing rapport and trust, 3. Identifying the problem or need of the customer, 4. Presenting your product or service as the ideal solution to the problem or need, 5. Answering questions or concerns satisfactorily, 6. Getting a commitment to take action, and 7. Getting referrals and repeat business. Your ability to excel in each of these areas as a salesperson is absolutely essential to your success. A weakness in any one of these critical success factor areas can hold you back from using all your other skills and abilities. For example, you could be very good at everything except prospecting. If you are poor at prospecting, it will hold you back from using all of your other skills. Your entire career could be in jeopardy. I've had several people through my seminars in the last couple of years who've taken this idea to heart. They realized that they were poor in prospecting and that it was sabotaging their careers. So, they decided to go to work to become excellent prospectors. And they did. One after another, they became some of the most successful and highest-paid people in their industries by resolutely attacking the area of prospecting until they were so good at it that they had far more people to see than they had hours available during the workday. If prospecting is a concern of yours, you should make a decision today to become so good at prospecting that you have appointments all day, every day, with good prospects who can and will buy your product or service within a reasonable amount of time. Some people are afraid of prospecting. The fear of rejection in selling is the primary reason why salespeople fail. But the fear of rejection is a learned fear, and you can unlearn it. You unlearn the fear of rejection by acting as if you had no fear at all. Go out and call on people day after day without being concerned whether or not they buy. In no time at all, you'll find yourself quite calm and relaxed about prospecting, and the sales will start to roll in. If you run your own business, there are critical success factors as well. These factors may be production, quality control, marketing, sales, finance, leadership, innovation, or distribution. It's up to you to identify the critical things that your company does that assure that it succeeds in a competitive market, and then identify where you are strong and where you are weak in each area. The one thing we know is that however you are doing what you are doing today, you must be doing it considerably better 1 year from now. The absence of a commitment to continuous improvement becomes an acceptance of mediocrity by default. What is your limiting factor? What is the one skill or ability that is determining the speed at which you achieve your goals in your work or your business? What is holding you back? What one talent or ability, if you developed it and did it in an excellent fashion, would have the greatest positive impact on your career? This is a terribly important question. If you do not know what this one skill is, the one skill that can help you more than anything else, you must find out. You must honestly evaluate yourself and your own performance, or you must ask the people around you. But whatever it is, you must determine what it is and then set it as a goal, make a plan, and go to work to bring that skill up to a high level. You see, if you become absolutely outstanding at an area that doesn't make any difference, while remaining poor at an area that is critical to your success, it can trip you up and hold you back every step of the way. Perhaps the greatest single example of the principle of the mass, of concentration of forces, took place at the Battle of Gaugamela on September 30th, 331 BC, between the armies of Alexander the Great of Macedon and Darius of Persia. Having lost two battles to Alexander, Darius was determined not to lose the third battle, which he knew would be decisive for the Persian Empire. He therefore assembled an army of almost 1 million men north of Babylon and cleared the ground in front of his army so that his battle chariots would have a flat terrain on which to maneuver. Alexander's army consisted of about 50,000 men and cavalry. Although estimates vary, the odds against Alexander were as much as 20-1. His men were in high spirits, but they were obviously a bit uneasy at seeing the hundreds of thousands of Persian infantry and cavalry arrayed against them. The night before the battle, Alexander gathered his chief officers to explain their roles in the coming conflict. Alexander believed in telling everyone exactly what was going to happen and exactly what they were expected to do when it happened. He assured his officers that they were going to win the next day. His officers were curious to know how it was that he was so convinced of victory when faced with such a huge mass of well-armed Persian troops. Alexander then explained that the army of Darius was made up of levies of troops from all over the Persian Empire. None of them had any loyalty to each other. They were only loyal to Darius. Alexander was convinced that if Darius were to be removed, the Persian army would fall apart. So he told his generals to pass the word down the line that the next day they would not try to defeat the entire Persian army. There was only one order of battle, one command. The next day the entire Macedonian army was to go out, follow Alexander, and kill Darius. The message was passed down the line from soldier to soldier. They would not have to worry about defeating the entire Persian army. They would just wait until the critical moment and then follow Alexander in a thrust into the Persian center where Darius was commanding the Persian forces. Their job was simple. It was to kill Darius. Kill Darius. Kill Darius. The next morning, as the sun rose, Darius and the Persians saw that the Macedonian army was lined up at an oblique angle to the Persian front. As the Macedonians began to move to their right, toward the left flank of the Persians, the Persian battle chariots were ordered to the attack. But Alexander was ready with professional javelin throwers and archers who showered missiles down on the chariots and horses, destroying most of them. As Alexander had expected, this left an opening in the Persian center. Alexander then turned to his companion guard of 6,000 crack Macedonian cavalry and shouted, "Now, follow me, and let us kill Darius." Like a spear, with Alexander as the spear point, the Macedonian cavalry plunged into the center of the Persian army. The Persians, with their large, unwieldy forces, were unable to bring reserves in to protect the front where Darius was most vulnerable. As Alexander and his Macedonians broke through the front lines and approached the encampment of Darius, Darius jumped on a horse and fled from the scene of the battle. Not wanting to be left alone, his top generals jumped on their horses and chariots as well and followed after Darius. When the word went out that Darius and his generals were fleeing the scene of battle and the Macedonians had already broken the front lines, as expected, the Persian army began to disintegrate. By the end of the day, the Persian army had been destroyed and scattered in all directions. The Persian Empire collapsed and Alexander became the master of perhaps the greatest and richest empire in history. He was 23 years old. Alexander knew that his outnumbered army could not defeat the mass of Persians, especially since he was hundreds of miles from his home in Macedonia and his supply base on the Mediterranean. He committed his entire army to the one point of intensity where victory would make all the difference. By attacking Darius with such vigor that Darius fled, the Persian army came apart, and the Macedonians, greatly outnumbered, achieved one of the greatest victories in military history. The Macedonian victory decided whether or not it would be Greek or Persian culture that would have such a great impact on Europe and Western civilization. The Battle of Gaugamela was a turning point that still affects us today. The battles you fight each day are not as intense or as consequential as the great battles that decided the fate of nations and empires, but the same qualities that assure victory are applicable to your activities as well. Your goal is to enjoy superb levels of physical health. Your additional goals are to have great relationships with the important people in your life. You want to do work that makes a difference and to do it well. Finally, you want to achieve a high level of financial independence so that you are not beholden to anyone. The chief distinguishing characteristic of leaders throughout the ages is intensity of purpose. If you take two people of the same talents and abilities and give them the same opportunities, the person who wants it the most and the longest and the hardest is the one who will eventually win out. You know that one of the keys to success is desire, intense, burning desire for a goal of some kind. The more intensely you want it, the more likely it is that you will discipline yourself to do whatever it takes to achieve it. And whatever your goal happens to be, there are specific things that you can do in attaining your goals that are far more valuable and important than other things. You cannot do everything, but you can do one thing, the most important thing, and you can stay with it until it's complete. The purpose of strategic thinking and strategic planning in business is always financial. It is always to increase the return on equity, or what is called ROE. The purpose of strategy in business is to change and improve the relative correlation of forces between yourself and your competitors. The proper result of strategy is that you are better off financially after strategizing and implementing your strategy than you were before you began. In your personal life, your goal is to increase your return on energy. Your capital is mental, emotional, and physical. Your job is to get the highest possible return on the investment of yourself and your energies in your work and in your life. In a way, you could say that all of life is a trade. You are continually trading your time and your life for the results and rewards that you enjoy. At any given time, you can look around you and total up the tangible and intangible assets of your life to determine how well you have traded your time up until now. For example, if you are 30 years old and you have been working for 10 years and your net worth is $20,000, you have traded each of those working years for $2,000. Is this a good trade or not? If someone offered you $2,000 per year plus expenses to work for them, would you take it? Well, if you have only accumulated $2,000 per year for the last 10 years, that is the kind of trade that you've been making. However, one of the most important rules of success is this. It doesn't matter where you're coming from. All that really matters is where you're going. If you're not happy with how well you have traded in the past, it's up to you to decide to trade differently and better in the future. If you're not happy with your current return on energy, it's up to you to improve the quality and quantity of your services and to concentrate your energy single-mindedly where you can get a higher return in the months and years ahead. In concentrating your powers, your ability to think, to decide, and then to discipline yourself to deploy your energies for a higher and better return is central to your success and happiness. The good news is that when you are concentrating single-mindedly on high-value activities, you feel much better and happier about yourself. Concentrated work on high-value activities actually releases energy and makes you feel stronger and more powerful. Once you get into it, you feel better and better about yourself. Eventually, you will condition yourself, train yourself in such a way that you will actually be impatient with low-value activities. You will find it easy to discipline yourself to do more and more of the things that have higher and higher payoffs. I was talking to a gentleman at a seminar recently, and he told me this is exactly what he had experienced over the last few years. When he started listening to my tapes and working on his own personal and professional development, he was making $21,000 per year. Last year, he told me that he had made just over $540,000. The interesting thing, he said, was that now he finds that he has little or no interest in television, radio, newspapers, or idle conversation that has nothing to do with his life or work. He said that his reference group, the people with whom he associates, has changed as well. The reason that he has become more and more impatient with activities that are more tension-relieving than goal-achieving is because he places a much higher value on himself and his life than he did before. The more he accomplishes, the more he wants to accomplish. The more he achieves, the more he likes and respects himself, and therefore the higher goals and standards he sets for himself. By a natural process, like cream, he is rising to the top and becoming an outstanding person. The same thing will happen to you almost naturally as you begin to think of yourself as a leader. If you set clear goals and objectives, become action-oriented, and take the offensive to achieve your goals. And if you continually discipline yourself to concentrate single-mindedly on those few things that can make the greatest contribution to your life and your rewards. Here's a good question for you. Why are you on the payroll? What have you been hired to accomplish? Most people, given a piece of paper and asked that question, will jot down all of the activities they engage in during the day. However, activities are merely inputs. You have been hired to achieve outputs. Sometimes we call these your key result areas. These are the things that you absolutely, positively have to accomplish in order to stay on the payroll. They are measurable, time-bounded, and completely under your control. You are responsible for them. When you apply the 80-20 rule to your work, you will find that 20% of your outputs account for 80% of the contribution that you make to your company and your life. And here's a real problem for most people. Even if you become absolutely outstanding at doing the 80% of things that only contribute 20% of your results, you will still fail in your career. Many people make the mistake of investing an enormous amount of effort at becoming better and better at things that are less and less important to achieving their real goals. But this is not for you. In concentrating your energies, you focus on the one or two things where excellent performance can bring extraordinary results. You focus on becoming better and better at the one or two things that can have the greatest positive impact on your life and career. What are your highest value activities, both at work and in your personal life? What are the things that you do that give you the highest return on energy? What are the things that you do that enable you to be a multiplication sign and enable you to leverage yourself in your activities? One of the ways that you think about the principle of concentration has to do with the potential consequences of doing something or not, or doing it well or not, as we've talked about before. There are many things that you do all day long, but in some of the things that you do, you're extremely good, and the consequences or impact of your success in those areas affects a lot of other people as well. The question is, what are they? What can you, and only you, do that, if done well, will make a real difference? What are the things that you and only you can do, and if you don't do them, no one else will, but which, if they are done really well, will make a real difference in your life? There's only one answer to this question at any given time. Your ability to identify that one thing and then to throw your whole heart into doing it well will make all the difference to your future. Lord Keynes once wrote that you should give a lot of thought to the future because you will be spending the rest of your life there. In concentrating your forces, you have to give a lot of thought to your future as well. Leaders think about the future. Only leaders can do that. Everyone else is dependent upon what and how well the leader thinks about the future and where the organization is going. If you want to be a leader, you have to think the way a leader thinks. Where do you want to be in 3 to 5 years? And what are the critical success factors or abilities that you will need to develop to assure that you get there? What customers are you serving today, and what customers will you be serving tomorrow? What will your customers of tomorrow need, want, or expect from you? What will your competitors be offering to your customers to get their business? What additional skills, abilities, or core competencies will you or your organization have to develop to achieve victory in the marketplace of tomorrow? In their book, The Disciplines of Market Leaders, the authors Treacy and Wiersma conclude that successful companies are excellent in one of three areas. Expertise or dominance in one of these areas can lead to dominance of the entire industry, especially in terms of customer retention and profitability. The first of these three areas is customer intimacy. This refers to the company's ability to establish high-quality relationships with its customers, characterized by an in-depth knowledge of the customer's situation and needs. As a salesperson, this is where you can achieve a core competency that can enable you to win against competition of all kinds. A second area of strategic excellence is a reputation for product innovation and quality. Companies like Sony, for example, can charge more for their products because of their reputation for innovation and excellence. The third discipline of market leaders is operational excellence. This could refer to a McDonald's or a Walmart, where their ability to do their business at the lowest possible cost enables them to be a low-price leader in a mass market. In each case, market dominance arises from an ability to concentrate single-mindedly on achieving superiority in a particular area. The authors also make the point that it is impossible to excel in more than one key area. Each individual or company has to maintain a high level of quality in two areas and achieve excellence in the third in order to dominate their marketplace. What does this mean to you? Well, if you are in sales, entrepreneurship, or small and medium-sized business, your major advantage is your ability to get close to your customer, to establish customer intimacy. At the same time, you must conduct your business economically and efficiently with good time and cost management. You must offer good quality products and services that you stand behind. But your area of concentration is probably customer intimacy. If you own your own company, you have to ask, what type, range, variety, and quality of products and services will I need to be offering to my customers 3 to 5 years from now? You need to be asking what size you want to grow to and what kind of financial results you want from your operations. As an individual, one of your goals should be to achieve financial independence. So a good question is, what is my plan to get my finances under control and to build a financial fortress during the course of my working lifetime? When are you going to start on your plan? The number one reason for financial failure in America is procrastination. Everyone wants to be financially independent, but they lack the discipline to concentrate single-mindedly on putting away a certain amount of their income on a regular basis. The most important attitude that seems to guarantee financial success in life is called long-time perspective. Your ability to take the long-term into consideration while you engage in your day-to-day activities is the key to your long-term success. The best formula for success is long-term vision combined with short-term focus. By establishing long-term objectives, such as financial independence, business and career success, good health, and happiness with your family, you can then make plans to attain those goals. Then, every day, make sure that what you are doing every minute is the highest and best use of your time and energy in moving you toward those long-term goals. Perhaps the most important question in time management is, what is the most valuable use of my time right now? What is the most valuable use of your time right now? Never give in to the temptation to clear up small things first. Make sure that every hour of every day you are working on the answer to that question. What is the most valuable use of my time right now? In military matters, there is a principle called the reverse salient. Normally, a salient is where one force makes a breakthrough into the lines of the opposing force. The salient is like a bulge or even a protrusion where a breakthrough is possible if it can be reinforced and exploited. A reverse salient has the opposite effect. This is where the entire line has moved forward except for one area where the enemy is holding out. This reverse salient can be a great danger because it can hold back your entire line. If it is properly reinforced by the enemy can break out in your rear and surround you. In business, we have reverse salients as well. These are the areas that are holding us back from realizing our full potential in everything else we do. Sometimes your reverse salient can be a specific skill or ability. It can involve a specific relationship or person. It can be associated with a specific competitor or competitive product or service. It is the one thing that, if it were resolved satisfactorily, would enable you to move ahead far more rapidly than you are today. Do you have a reverse salient? What is it? Sometimes your ability to identify it and to concentrate single-mindedly on eliminating it can give you the winning edge in your work and your career. Sometimes your ability to identify one thing that is holding you back and then to concentrate on eliminating that one thing can help you more than anything else you can do. All extraordinary accomplishment is preceded by thousands of ordinary accomplishments that nobody ever sees or appreciates. Your ability to concentrate your forces on just those goals, activities, skills, and areas of high value that can contribute more to your life than anything else is the key to your achieving great success. Once you've decided upon your point of intensity, your critical success factor, your key result area, or the one thing that you and only you can do that, if done well, will make a real difference, throw your whole heart into it and stay with it until it's 100% complete. When you can discipline yourself to do that, you will become unstoppable.